Ruth Rendell's loyal readers will not be surprised that her latest novel, 13 Steps Down, goes deep inside the mind of a man who's equally obsessed with a famous murderer and a famous supermodel. For the past four decades, Britain's queen of crime has been turning out, at a rate of more than one a year, novels which combine psychological suspense, black humor, and social commentary. She's won every award for crime fiction, most more than once, and on top of that, in 1997, she was made a life peer and has become an active member of the House of Lords. 13 Steps Down is just out from Crown, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Baroness Rendell of Baber to this country and to my show today. Hello. So should I address you as Lady Ruth?
No, you'd please address me as Ruth.
The book is dedicated to a fellow mystery writer, P.D. James, who's also a baroness and a member of Parliament. I always thought that the writers of these sorts of things are competitors. They see themselves as rivals. Is that not the case? You and Phyllis get along well?
We get along very well. We're good friends. I think attempts have been made to make us competitive, perhaps to set us against each other, but it's never been successful.
I can't imagine Sue Grafton being given an appointment by the White House, although she does live in a state where Arnold Schwarzenegger is governor. So are mystery writers accorded more respect in Britain than they are here?
I don't know. I wouldn't think so. I would give Sue Grafton an honor if it was up to me. I love her books.
13 Steps Down is the story of Michael Mix Cellini, an exercise equipment repairman. He goes to people's homes to service broken treadmills and stair steppers, and sometimes the lonely housewives who own them. Did you want to make it clear with those things that the story takes place in the present?
I suppose so. I always like to set my books very precisely and usually in the present. The here and now, it's very important to me when I'm writing that there shouldn't be any doubt about that.
But you also combine old-fashioned storytelling with those up-to-the-minute elements. One reviewer described the book as contemporary Gothic. Do you like that?
I think it's pretty accurate. I don't know whether I like it or dislike it. It's all right. The contemporary part is good anyway.
Does that come out of the old newspaper reporter in you? That interest in current events, even though you're part of some other much older tradition when you're writing these crime novels?
I don't think much comes out of my few years as a journalist. It's probably deliberate that I want my books to appeal to people as being about... I don't want them to seem old-fashioned. I would very much dislike that. If I thought that was happening, I think perhaps I might... And I couldn't do something about it. I would not want to write anymore.
Mix is obsessed with the real-life serial killer John Reginald Halliday Christie, who was executed in the 1950s. Americans probably will recognize that story from the movie 10 Rillington Place. Actually, there have been a number of different books and films based on that crime. Is it really one of the infamous crimes in modern British history? Is it the one that everybody remembers?
It's among those that everybody remembers. I don't really know why. It's something that I'm not all that interested in true crime, but that one I am. And there have been a lot of books written about it, and it was horrible and remarkable, and I think very interesting. And maybe that accounts for why it is something so memorable.
In the case of Mix, do you think that being obsessed with a criminal like Christie is a sign of mental imbalance or a tip-off that he's likely to commit the same sorts of crimes?
Well, it is in his case to be that obsessed with a man who is generally regarded as a monster is a bit odd. It's a bit strange, especially as he idolizes him. He thinks he's... the horrible, squalid house he lived in the street should have been preserved as a museum instead of being fashioned into a rather nice place. I think those are symptoms of his really nasty mindset.
you have the best attendance record in the House of Lords, I understand, and you use that as a platform to talk about things, and most recently lamenting the state of British public library system. Do you see that as part of your responsibility, not only as a member of the House of Lords, but as a writer? Because you often include social issues like AIDS, domestic violence, environmental destruction, the exploitation of illegal immigrants in your books.
Oh, yes, I suppose the answer to all that is yes. Except I didn't know I had the best attendance record. That's rather nice. Yes, I do. And, of course, I do use my books for as platforms or for airing social issues, especially the detective stories. It's an interest of mine, and I think the classic detective story is a very good place to air these things.
Most Britons who are given honorary titles prefer to leave politics to other people. I don't think that Sir Paul, Sir Mick, Sir Elton show up for sessions of the House of Lords, but you do.
But they are not peers.
Oh, is that it? You have to get the life peerage.
They're knights.
We don't understand those
things. No, I know you don't. And, of course, why should you? Why should you? But I am a life peer, and my attendance is required. Nothing would happen if I didn't go.
The House of Lords, so there, in fact, now isn't, wasn't there a recent law passed that made all peerages life peerages? There was a time when you could have inherited it from a great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather.
Yeah, and of course you will always be able to do that. What you won't have as an hereditary peer is a seat in the House of Lords. You'll still have a title. Not everybody is yet a life peer, but that will happen.
You've written something over 50 books now. I've read different estimates, because sometimes you write under other names. It could be 60 or 70, and you don't seem to be repeating yourself. So how do you keep up with it? How do you think when you're working out a plot, oh, gee, I better avoid this where I'm going because that's like a book I wrote 20 years ago?
Yes, I do. And then I do avoid it. I don't try to adapt it. I only write under two names, not several. That could never be too much for me.
Well, people know both of those names.
Yes.
Barbara Vine is the other one.
Mm-hmm.
I just assumed that there might have been others.
No, there have never been any others, and there never will be.
And your novels fall into three categories, don't they? Police procedurals, which star Chief Inspector Wexford, non-detective crime novels, which you publish under your own name, and then the psychological suspense novels that you've written under the name Barbara Vine. So at this point, does it really matter? Do you even have to use the Barbara Vine name?
I suppose not, but there are quite a lot of people who only read me as Barbara Vine. And if I started calling myself Ruth Rendell, they wouldn't know which one to distinguish. And they do like it that way, just as there are some people who only read the Ruth Rendell Wexfords. And the pattern, the way it's arranged, suits me. And I will keep on with it.
That's the sort of thing that happened with Evan Hunter when he wrote under Ed McBain. Even though people knew he was the same person, some were drawn to what he did when he wrote as Ed McBain and others what he did when he wrote as Evan Hunter. But what happens in your head? Do you sit down to write a Barbara Vine novel, or do you start writing a novel and discover that it's a Barbara Vine or a Ruth Rendell?
I know before I write, probably for some time before I write, I mean a matter of months, that this idea, these ideas put together, this thing that's simmering in my mind is going to be a Barbara Vine, for example, or a Wexford. And it doesn't change. I'm not going to just think suddenly, oh, well, no, that ought to be one of the psychological suspense novels. That doesn't happen.
The Wexford books have been turned into a popular British TV series, and several of the other books have also been adapted for TV. One, Live Flesh, was made into a film by Pedro Almodovar. I suspect that when you saw that film, you wondered just how much Ruth Rendell was actually in that film.
But I did like it. It was a very good film. One would rather have a film made of one's book that was very different from it than one which slavishly followed it and was bad. I've also had three French films made, two by Chabrol and one by Claude Miller, which were
That's not bad.
Excellent.
Well, if you get a great filmmaker like Claude Chabrol doing an adaptation of your book, you can be pretty sure that it's going to be good.
And
Almodovar is another example.
Mm, absolutely.
Is it true that the 20th Wexford book is being released in Britain next week?
No, it's being released in Britain in about 5 or 6 weeks' time.
Ah. And then how long a gap is there between the publication there and here?
I don't know. And at the moment, I don't suppose anybody knows. Between the publication of 13 Steps Down in Britain and its publication here, I think there was 10 months.
Hmm. Well, you have threatened to stop writing the Wexfords, but you haven't. Do you at times just get tired of him?
I don't have to be always writing him, though, do I? I do write the other books. I'm not tired of him, and I didn't really threaten to do that. I said I would do it if I could not find another direction for them to go in, and the direction I found was when I began to bring in the social issues so that they became known, at least to me, as the political Wexfords, and that was a new lease of life for them.
And in this book, where there is a certain amount of political stuff, but there's also a lot of psychological stuff here. Mix is obsessed with an Anglo-African supermodel, Narisa Nash, who lives nearby. They both had difficult childhoods, and there was childhood abuse. You never studied psychology, did you?
Well, yes, I've studied it, but I've studied it in an informal way. But Narisa does not have. Narisa has a wonderful childhood. It's mixed.
Well, she was forced to become her father's housekeeper and caretaker.
No, that's Gwendolyn.
I'm sorry to correct you,
but
that
is, Gwendolyn had a dreadful childhood, of course, dreadful youth. I've been reading psychology all the time. I've been writing. I do read it a lot, and I think it's helped me. I'm sure it must have done.
Is that part of the fun, getting into the mind of somebody who is very different from yourself?
It's part of the job. Some of it's fun, yes, of course.
Well, what happens when you are writing from the viewpoint of a person who is a total monster?
Well, I've worked on the characters, so I've got their background. I mean, I've done so in my mind. I've got this childhood, the background, the job they do, what they look like, how they're likely to act in certain circumstances. When I've got all that put together, I sort of step into their shoes, and then when they begin to do things, I think, well, with all that baggage, so to speak, behind them, what would they do now? And then what would they do again? And it seems to work, and a consistent behaviour, monstrous behaviour, of course, happens.
Are you one of those writers who pretty much knows what's going to happen before you sit down to write the book, or...?
Yes.
So you definitely know how the ending is
going to be. No, I know what's going to happen for the early stages. And in the Wexfords, because they must be to a certain extent formulaic, I do have a pretty good idea of the end. But with the other books, I don't know. I have the characters, I've introduced them, I let them interact, and then let's see what happens.
In the Wexfords, the problem, it seems to me, is coming up with new material about people we know an awful lot about already.
Yeah, in a way it is. On the other hand, I do know the people, these people. I mean, really, Wexford and Burden and their families. I know them very well indeed. They're backwards. So the problem is having them do new things.
Ruth Rendell will be reading and signing books tonight at 7 o'clock at Partners and Crime. That's at 44 Greenwich Avenue between Charles and Perry Streets. And you should stop by, especially if you are a fan, and so many people in this country are fans. I don't know how your readership compares here with Britain, but there are some British crime writers who actually have more popularity in the United States than they do back home.
That is not true of me. Although I do well here, I'm always finding when I come to this country, and incidentally I do come at least once a year, I do find that I get a lot of unexpected fans, but really I think more popular in my own country.
Thank you so much for being with us.